you guys. It is time for the donut of the day. Today, we have donuts from Cat's Luck Vegan from Michelle. She's the owner of Cat's Luck Vegan. That is it's a local vegan, it's not a bakery because she doesn't have a storefront, but she does orders every Saturday. She's not just a baker, but she's an activist around town. She's amazing. You have to go check her out on Instagram. It's Cat's Luck Vegan on Instagram. And Cat's Luck Vegan.
Like vegan.
Luck vegan.
Cat's Luck vegan. Oh, I've seen her website, but I didn't. Okay, Cat's Luck
vegan. Cat's Luck. One of the amazing things she does is these cake raffles that if you enter, you give $5 to enter the raffle, and then she picks a charity to give all the proceeds to from the raffle. And then the winner gets a whole cake. From her.
Wow.
And she's always just standing up for what's right. So I love supporting her. Oh, and Ted is holding the first donut we're gonna try.
Because they're just sitting here and they're like burning a hole in this plate.
Okay, so did you microwave it? Like I told you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the frick. What the hell is it? Something with a pretzel.
But it's a pretzel one. Yeah.
It's a pretzel one, caramelish pretzel, and these are all vegan. All right, let's try it. Also, I got them on Saturday. It's Monday.
Oh, Saturday. Today's Monday.
Yeah.
They're delicious. I had her stuff before, though. She makes really good things.
Yeah, and she's just so sweet. So I love supporting her. So that was the caramelish pretzel drizzle thing. And so then this other one we have on the plate. Do you see it? You got it? So this is maple crumb.
Oh, maple crumb.
So we love maple here.
I love caramel too. But
I know you do. You love caramel, yeah. I always remember that. I'm like, okay, Ted, caramel, milk duds.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay, maple crumb. Vegan. Maple crumb. Uh-huh. To veganism.
Should I go upside down?
I love that crumb. Mm. you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking.
It's good, but it's also, I'm sorry it's been microwaved. That's the only thing.
I'm sorry, because I told you to.
I know, but that's okay.
The amazing thing about Michelle, too, is that she makes sure that her ingredients are ethically sourced.
Mm.
But yeah, so thank you, Michelle. And everyone, go follow her on Instagram, Cat's Luck Vegan.
They're very good. Yes, they're very good. Yes, follow her. Order from her.
Mm-hmm.
Try her.
She's a one-woman show. Yeah, let's just get into this episode. This seventh, I think. Yeah, it's the seventh episode of Why I Failed Your Class. And we're going to be talking about learned helplessness. One of the reasons I failed your class. First of all, what is learned helplessness? If you were a psych major, then you know, I would hope. But take AP psych, but let's go back to the dude who founded learned helplessness because he did a fucked up experiment on dogs. His name was Seligman. Is it Martin Seligman? Probably. So Seligman did, it's his theory, and he did it on dogs. He did an experiment on dogs that where he shocked the dogs. He had them in this box, and there was a divider. And if the dogs went to the other side of the box, they would get shocked. He observed learned helplessness when he was doing these experiments because he noticed that the dogs didn't try to escape the shocks if they had been conditioned to believe that they couldn't escape. So even after the shocks didn't happen, they still stayed. They were too, they learned helplessness, hence the term. It says learned helplessness occurs when people or animals feel helpless to avoid negative situations. So he did this experiment with the dogs, thinking that nothing they could do would change their reality. And what psychology tells us is, like, learned helplessness happens if you are in a situation where nothing you do seems to make a difference. And so when you, like, grow up and with, like, traumatic things happening, and if you, like, if you're growing up in chaos, which, yeah, kind of happened to me, and I would, like, try to change things, but nothing ever would happen. I realized it's because I wasn't the problem, and the people I was asking to change couldn't change at the time. But in that respect, I kind of think I developed the belief that, like, oh, what I do doesn't really matter, because when I say things, no one really listens. So that's the definition, and that's the background with the dogs, which pisses me off that he did that experiment on dogs. Learned helplessness also backs up why people don't leave abusive relationships. If they're with someone, it takes them a little longer to leave. And some people don't understand that, how, like, why are you still staying with that person if they're treating you so bad? It's part of it is learned helplessness. But you can overcome it. The most common treatment for it is CBT. Cognitive behavioral therapy. So that's kind of the background that I got from Google. But I know that learned helplessness definitely played a role in my life. But I want to also talk about the ways that I have overcome it and tools that are very helpful.
Well, lots of kids learn that in a way because they don't want to get in trouble. A lot of kids go through that, don't you think?
I think everyone goes through it to an extent. Some people just have it, maybe that, like, hinders them more. I think the difference is, though, like, if a kid's afraid of being punished, if they're at home and they, like, stop doing the behavior that they got punished for, but they still get punished, that's what learned helplessness is, because you know that no matter what you do, you're still, someone's getting angry at you.
And that, don't you think that comes into the school then, too? Because they think, well, every adult's going to do that.
Yeah, that's a kind of.
So I think that, you know, like, they have different experiences with different adults. And that's why school can be good sometimes if you have teachers who really try to recognize those things and then say, okay, look, you're not bad at everything you do. And, you know, you're good at certain things. And they say, hey, wait a minute. Okay, so I'm good at some things. And they start believing in themselves again a little bit.
It helps to hear it from an adult and to, like, build the muscle of, like, I was talking about it as, like, gathering evidence as to why you can do something. That's what helps me kind of get out of it.
Do you gather evidence by looking back at things that you've done that are right?
Yeah, like, if I'm, like, feeling a little, like, if I'm telling myself I am not smart or I'm lazy, I look back at college or even high school classes in my senior year and, like, look back at my college GPA and, like, that's, like, my evidence that I did things that helped me get somewhere because I did do well. And I look to the past and I'm like, here's evidence of why I can do this again.
Right. Okay, that's good.
Like, I'm going to sign up for this project because I know that I have the writing skills. And I know that I have the writing skills because Lenore gave me an A on my paper. And I got a 4.0 in college and blah, blah, blah. And I churned out papers. But your brain doesn't always want to go to that type of evidence first. Like, we just want to, like, crap all over ourselves and to avoid danger. We are living in a different world than the one that our brains are kind of wired for. I treat those like we're not supposed to have 9-to-5s. We're all supposed to be naked in the forest eating berries. And I say we bring that back.
Okay. Okay, so we got to get rid of our iPads and everything and all our lights.
Yeah. And toilet paper.
Toilet paper. Oh, yeah, we start using leaves again.
This is a perfect spot for a commercial for a bidet.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. I wrote elbow phenomenon. I don't know what the frig that means now.
Elbow?
Elbow phenomenon. It was probably late at night when I wrote this episode. I'm just thinking of, like, it says how, like, my body takes up space, and I'm just like, yeah, I have an arm, I have an elbow, and people see it, and that's important because I'm taking up space, and people see my body, and my friends see my body, and they're like, that's Jenna, and that matters. I'm just like, yeah. Like, just sometimes just you showing up is enough. Learned helplessness, self-efficacy, and motivation for me are like a little trifecta. I remember when I learned what self-efficacy was in high school, I was probably 17, I was like, I don't have that.
You were in your psychology class?
I think I learned about it in poli-sci, actually, because we were talking about something else, efficacy in politics, and then I started Googling efficacy, and then self-efficacy came up. I don't think anyone has like 100%, but I think I was lacking the healthy amount of, like, I never trusted myself to do something that I said I was going to do.
Like what?
It could be in an assignment, or it could be self-efficacy being like, oh, I can talk to them, or I'm going to show up to this meeting and I'm going to kill it. Like, I'm going to show up to this meeting and make sure that I sell this product or whatever. With household things too, like cleaning, I had low self-efficacy in that.
Well, that's because that's not on your priority list. It's not something you really care about so much, right?
Well, I mean, now I know that I know how to clean, so it's different. Like, I could tell someone, like, I'm going to clean this. But before, I was like, I'll fuck it up. Because everything I did cleaning-wise in my house was wrong. And I was like, I don't get it because I'm trying to do what you said and it's still not right.
Would they help you do it right? To teach you?
No.
Or they want you?
What?
Just got angry with you.
Angry. So, like, that's not a learning environment. Yeah. I already, like, have a plan for, like, teaching my kids how to clean. Like, I'm going to make it so loving and fun. We talked about, I guess, kind of where does learned helplessness come from? Like, usually childhood, but also it can happen if a kid's getting bullied in school and
True, yeah. They
talk to everyone about it and no one does anything about it.
It can happen on the job too, if your superiors are not encouraging you or telling you you're always doing something wrong when really you're not.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, well then I throw in the towel because everything I do doesn't work. It's why you need like a little sliver of hope.
Good. Now, what things didn't you do that should have been done?
Exactly. Different? And not say it like, you idiot kid. Like, that shit never works. Sorry. Spoiler alert. It didn't work with me. I just got scared. But that's the amazing thing, though, is that I did learn that my words do have value because of the way I was treated by my first grade teacher. Shout out to you, Mrs. Asaro. She was like, you are nice. And you have a good mind and you care about other people. And she would, like, let me talk. And she would, like, sit down with me and be like, let's do this. If you want to do this project, if you're upset about something, let's change it. And that's where the anti-bullying meeting that I organized in first grade came from. She's like, she was so open to my ideas, too. She wouldn't shut them down. They just, like, teachers appreciated my brain in a way that my parents just didn't know how to. Knew the importance of that. And that did kind of help me be like, wait, there's something to this. Like, maybe I am. I think I actually maybe do have a nifty idea. And that can, so that's why school's so awesome when there are teachers who are bolstering you, because even if you learn that nothing you say or do matters at home, you can still see it in a different setting like school.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is good. You can do it maybe in a sport too.
Some kids are so shut down, they don't even participate at school.
Yeah, and I think of every little thing. Oh yeah, I actually have it written down, the butterfly effect. Because like every little thing counts. Like, all those little moments that my teachers, like, believed in me, like, helped me believe in myself and helped me get further and affected the decisions I made. And I'm like, what if that didn't happen? Like, what if one little thing didn't, what would be different? I mean, yeah, you're right, though. Some kids are really shut down. They need the most, that needs the most help.
You know, I had this kid who was very shut down, and he would respond to me at school, and he was coming out of his shell, and he was participating more, and he started to believe that he was good at writing, and he could read, and he could participate and have conversations in class. He was getting stronger and stronger. And then COVID hit. And so then he went home, but he continued with his belief in himself. But now his parents are home all the time because they lost their jobs also. And he had so much attention from his parents. And so he would write, because at the beginning of COVID, I had kids keep journals, basically. Let's write about what we did, what's going on, and how is this affecting you, and how has it changed your life, and what's good about it, what's bad about it. This kid flourished because his parents were there, and they did their homework with him, and he would read the books that we were reading to them, and they would read back. This year he's a sophomore this year, this is his second year, and he participates all the time. You know, he's one of the students who talks during the, he's at home. And he participates, whereas a lot of kids don't participate.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he needed that little boost from you and his teachers. I don't know if I told you this. I was in fourth grade. I was 9 years old. And I had a test coming up on the counties of New Jersey. And I had to memorize the counties of New Jersey. And my dad's business partner friend staying over our house. There was no homework being checked or anything like that. But somehow, like, I guess I was talking about the test or whatever. And Jim is his name. He was like, you have a test? It was in the morning before school. And he was like, I heard, like, you're saying you have a test? Like, did you study? And I was like, no, I don't study. What? And he's like, you're sitting down right now and we're studying. And I was like, okay. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do it. And then I aced the test just because of like freaking 20 minutes with Jim. He was like, no, I'm covering it and you're going to read. Like, he was like shocked that I didn't study. He was like, huh? No, you sit down and we're going to do it. And it was like the most time someone had like invested in that. Like, yeah, we are doing this now. And I felt very like cared for. And also I aced that test. Like, I needed that structure, and yeah. I was like, wait, studying. Maybe there's something to it. The question is, what keeps you motivated? Which is part of how I help learn helplessness. So what keeps you motivated?
You're asking me.
Yes.
Or what keeps me motivated? Oh, lately. It's kind of hard with COVID lately, it seems like, because the motivation, I think, you know, there's being social is a motivation, and also building a future is a motivation. At a point in my life where I'm thinking about retiring and ending certain things, so I'm finding motivation more difficult in some ways, except that what I'm thinking is just, you know, restructuring my life, basically, and that's what happens every so often. I mean, when I became a teacher, you know, I had a whole another life before that, and I just restructured my life when I became a teacher, and then when I became a father, I restructured my life, and so bringing different things, new things into your life is a way of motivating you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me, the future is a motivation. You know, what do I want to do that's different, or what do I want to bring into my life? My son definitely motivates me, you know, wanting to make sure that he doesn't need me anymore, but just that, you know, we are a part of each other's lives, and what I share with Bernard, it motivates me, you know, how we work together to build things.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, people motivate me.
Yeah, people, definitely.
People definitely motivate me. my friends, my teachers motivated me. Sometimes like spite motivates me, if I'm quite honest.
Okay,
yeah. You know.
Spite, angry.
Yeah.
Anger can move people.
I've done some fun things. Constructive. So. Constructive, yeah. Yeah. I only break cars if they've been pre-approved in the junkyard. I promise. Yes, spite. Peer pressure. No, but friends. So
you have learned that cleaning, you could just you beat your the couches and things like that.
Oh yeah, beating cleaning. The pillows.
You do that, you can vacuum.
Yes. Oh my god. Yes.
So if you're gonna make cleaning fun, that's motivating too.
That's so true. And yeah, like little knickknacks in my life keep me motivated too. And like, ooh, when I was in high school, knowing that I had a muffin to eat in the morning kept me motivated. I remember telling my SAT tutor that. I was like, y'all, like, honey, the only thing getting me through is that I know I have a muffin in the morning. She's like, I respect that, because me too.
What motivates you to do work?
Fear. Fear of not having money. And what else motivates me to do work? Moving forward in my career, which I guess like is the future, and not disappointing people. What?
And what?
Not disappointing people.
What, stimulation of your mind also, that's a motivation. And you get so stimulated by being around other people or doing the work that you do.
But that's liking the work thing. Important. Yeah, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm just doing it, and I'm like, I have to find the motivation in this. Because sometimes it's a little tedious and mindless. But so sometimes you can't be motivated all the time. I think about my New York life and how many people I was constantly seeing and talking to. And I can't believe it used to be like that. Like, every day was filled with something. And, like, I was always trying to, like, keep up appearances and keep up, like, it was so, there were so many things to always do, so many people to always see. And now it's, yeah, like, I really have to pick and choose who I see, which is awesome, too. But I do sometimes miss the, like, there was so
spontaneity. No.
Yes. Oh, my God. The spontaneity of, like, running into your friend on the street and being like, let's just go to this bar. Or,
yeah.
Oh.
Or coffee house.
Yes. And just, like, going dancing and meeting random people dancing and then starting to become friends. Literally, that's, yeah. But. Oh, an ode to pre-COVID days. Yeah, what keeps you motivated? That's a good one. And then how do you make a difference to the world? And I'm asking you again. I know how you do. But I'm asking you.
In a way, by teaching, I make a difference. You know, I'm working with my students. I give them my time, not just in school, but after school too. And I think about them. I don't know, you know, I try to make them feel important. That kind of make a difference in a way. But how else do I make a difference? You know, trying to be politically aware and do things that are good for others, not just myself. I think that it's important. I feel like we're here for each other, you know, and so we need to do things for each other. So that's a motivation, and it's also what... how I contribute to the world. That's one of the things I'm concerned about with retirement too, is I want to make sure I can keep giving towards, you know, society and also do something that's important.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt that you will.
Me. I mean, I'm not saying that by doing that, I'm not thinking about myself, because I am, because those are the things that make me happy actually. You know?
Yeah.
I do like to.
Yeah.
Be able to just help somebody.
I agree. I think the way I'm pretty sure I make a difference to the world. The one thing I know I do things like politically too. I love that too. It makes me feel great. And I do feel a difference, even if it's just like a few people that like I gave flyers to that they didn't know about the issue. But I know that I make a difference and like I make people happy because I've heard that from people and they're like if even if I make like a little funny bit or joke and people say like people sometimes say really nice things and they're like, this made my day or whatever, and I'm like, maybe that made them happier so that they'll be nice to someone else too. And that makes me feel great because I mean for many reasons. But yeah. I just think it's important to notice how you make a difference and how you improve other people's lives and how you even just like three people in your life whose lives you make easier, like to just remind yourself of those people will help you understand that you being alive and you taking up space is a good thing.
I think it's important to smile at other people too and open the door for people and do things on a daily basis like that, to be polite, have respect for others. That's a way of contributing too. It's really important. You don't see that so much, and people don't even make eye contact.
Oh, really?
I think with COVID, that maybe it's different.
I had one last question, which was how much do teachers really notice about their students?
How much do they really notice?
Yeah, we need to know.
We want everything. You notice my socks? I notice yours too.
I love that. I think I'm gonna get that on a t-shirt. I love the spice that you just gave me. Okay, Ted, we're gonna wrap up this episode. Thank you so much. We are literally both so tired, so if we didn't make sense, that's because we need to sleep, right?
Yes.
But we love you guys, and keep listening and keep on keeping on, and you do matter. The fact that you take up space in this world is very important.
We'll be peppier next time.
I promise. Bye. All right. It's just me, Jenna, now. And I did not do a Ted's Fridge review. We are quarantined. I have my own fridge, actually. And I wanted to do my own fridge review. Also, a review of something Ted baked for me. First of all, he baked bread pudding. He made it with this bread that I gave him from Food Not Bombs. It's like this little, not semolina. What was it? It was like this braided sesame roll of like pretty tough bread. Like if you chew the bread, it's like very chewy. If you bite into it, it's like hard on the outside. And he didn't get to eating it, so he was like, let me make it into bread pudding. And you guys, holy shit, it was so good. It had, so I have this, there's this one bread pudding in my life from this restaurant, this Italian restaurant that I used to go to as a kid, and it was like chocolate bread pudding, right? And that was my top tier. That was the gold standard of bread puddings. But this one is so different from it and amazingly delicious. It's very up there with the bread puddings I have had in my life. I think it's the favorite. It's up there with the chocolate one. And he put, what did he put? There was definitely cinnamon in it and like creaminess, raisins, which are so good. I think there was like some orange in it too, which normally I would be a little bit hesitant about, but holy shit, you guys, it was so good. And the sesame on top, that was already there, part of the bread, added such an amazing flavor. So I don't know if any of you will be able to recreate that, because it was just kind of a magical moment. Oh, he also sweetened it. He reduced the sugar and put maple syrup for half of it, which nothing but respect. King. Oh my God. Like, that's my shit right there. So anyway, on to the fridge review. In my fridge, I recently went to Trader Joe's and I purchased, for the first time, the Green Goddess dressing. I have tried the Green Goddess dressing before, but this is the first time I got it for my own house. And, oh my God, it's so good. It is worth the hype. It tastes like pesto, but you put it on your salad. Oh, it's so fucking good. I'm probably going to go to Trader Joe's later and buy more of it because I'm already out of it. I went to Trader Joe's on Tuesday. It's Friday now. Thank you guys for having patience in this episode that came out late. We had an insane few weeks. I have been so drained with the craziness, adjusting to a new schedule. So busy, but obviously this is one of my favorite things to do, this podcast with Ted, and your support means the world. Thank you so much for all the love. If you have a stale loaf of bread in your kitchen, I highly recommend making it into bread pudding. Love you all. Goodbye.